Let's call the Senate Labor and Commerce to order. With us, Senator Ellis, Senator Davis, Senator Seekins, and Senator Stevens are engaged in the PPT activities and will join us as their schedules permit. Also with us today, Representative Wilson. Thank you for joining us. And today's meeting is focused on the recent contract award of the state's health care provider to Premera Blue Cross. A number of questions have come to my office, and other legislators have asked questions about what might have been some unusual procedures in changing the and awarding the awarding the contract to Blue Cross. So I've asked the commissioner to join us and to go through the procedure or go through the history and then be available for questions that we might have. So, commissioner, if you'd join us, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With your permission, I bring the Chief Procurement Officer, Vern Jones, to the
Please do. Mr. Jones, welcome. And if you'd like to just begin with the an overview, understand that the award is under protest and there are some limitations as to what you feel you can share with us, but if you want to give us your view of how this process developed and so we can explore it a little further.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I'm Scott Nordstrand, the Commissioner of the Department of Administration. And I'd like to begin with just a little bit of background about the need for this particular contractor and how it works and the state health plans work. We have two state health plans that the Department of Administration administers directly. One is an active health plan for about 5,500 state employees and their dependents. They are the folks that aren't with the union trust health plans. And then there are also, then there's the retiree health care plan, which is frankly much larger. It's about 29,000 retirees and growing every year. And their dependents, the total covered lives for the two plans is about 68,000 people in Alaska and around the world probably. We are a self-insured plan since sometime in the late 90s, so we don't buy insurance from an insurance company per se and have them take care of the risk. We self-insure, which means that doesn't mean that we don't act like an insurance company. We are essentially our own insurance company, and we have two pools of money that we pay claims out of. We have a retiree health trust, and we have an active plan health trust. And essentially what happens is we hire a third-party administrator to process claims, to pay claims, to work the system for us, and to pay claims out of those health plans. And so we charge ourselves the retiree health or the retiree systems, the retirement systems, and the active employees a certain amount of money every month, and that goes into these trusts wherein they're eventually paid out. Periodically, as you know, Senator, we request proposals from vendors to let contracts in a competitive way. This particular contract that we had with Aetna had expired or will expire in June 30 of 06. All of the options to renew it had expired. So we began the process at the end of last year of obtaining proposals from someone, including Aetna, to continue providing us with third-party administrator.
Excuse me, Commissioner, if you don't mind, as questions come up, if we interrupt you to go along. And the Aetna contract, how long had that been in? When was the last time it was up for rebid?
At least 5 years, but I can say that Aetna, in one form or another, except for a couple of years in the early 90s, has been either the insurance provider when we weren't self-insured or the third-party administrator for the state. There was a time, I understand, when the contract went to another party, but then Aetna actually purchased that organization and became the third-party administrator again. So it's gone on either under this contract or previous contracts for probably 24 years. Mm-hmm. It's a very long time.
And the last time, what is the cycle when you you put these things out to bid? You said 5 years or?
I would refer that to Vern Jones, if I could.
Mr. Jones?
Mr. Chairman, and Vern Jones. Vern Jones, Chief Procurement Officer for the state. There is no set amount of time for a contract. It just depends on what's called for in the RFP each time. This contract is that we're entering into now is a 3-year contract with 4 1-year renewals for a total of 7 years. But that's not to say that the previous contract was for that length.
And we can certainly find that out, but it was for a significant length of time.
Yeah, what occasioned this RFP?
Because the contract on its very terms ran out of options and concluded. There was no, if it was 5 years with 3 options or 2 years with whatever options, the options were gone. And when that happens, the contract has to be relet.
Oh, okay, thank you. And Representative Wilson had a question. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so we went through a process, as I said, and I know it's been the subject of some interest for you and others. I've put together a little cheat sheet for me to describe, and I want to go through the sort of the circumstance of events. And when I testified recently to the Ways and Means Committee, the department had not yet prepared its response to the bid protest. I think you have that now, Representative Wilson. So I can be a little more free about what we discuss here today, and I'm glad to do that. I will say, however, that some of the details of these circumstances, you know, were not known to me personally, and they are the state's position on this, the department's position on this, is accurately reflected in our response to the bid protest that you have. So I default to that for the very specific details, but I would like to discuss the general chain of events that that occurred. The proposals were submitted, and I don't know exactly when because I wasn't involved in the process at that time, but I know there did come a time when the Chief Procurement Officer, Vern Jones, came to me and said that the proposals had been reviewed. There were 4 that were submitted. One was for pharmacy only. There were 3 that I believe were submitted for the entirety of the healthcare and pharmacy. Is that right?
Two were just pharmacy.
Okay. All right. Two were just pharmacy, but there were 2 that were for the health plan and for the pharmacy services. And the concern that Vern expressed when he came to see me was that Aetna's proposal had been deemed to be non-responsive because there was a series of questions that were apparently unanswered in their proposal to the state. And we actually, I think, at that point, the procurement officer checked a couple of times looking for if there was something that had been missing, but the regulations don't allow us to, after the time had come for proposals to be submitted, to accept supplemental materials. So believing that all the materials were there and that the materials necessary to be responsive were not, it was determined by the procurement officer that their bid was non-responsive. And at that point, the regulations for the Department of Administration say if there is one responsive bidder, you can do one of 3 things. You can either decide to throw the whole thing out and start over, do another RFP. You could do some kind of a limited procurement where you invite some that were likely to be able to be responsive if only there were some more information. You could choose that, or you could negotiate with enter into discussions, as they say in the statute, with the one successful bidder. That the bid being what it was and it appearing to be susceptible to award and responsive, that was the direction that was taken, was to enter into discussions with Premera Blue Cross to determine whether or not a contract would be reached.
If I can interrupt at mm-hmm. this point again, and again, this seems to be somewhat the crux of the discussion, that because I think perhaps erroneously Aetna was decided to be non-responsive because there were materials missing, they'd been misplaced, and Does this happen frequently? I mean, we're talking about a 30-plus million-dollar contract and materials that are germane to the contract get misplaced. Has this ever happened before?
I would defer to the Chief Procurement Officer on that.
Mr. Chairman, in my memory, I can't recall that this has ever happened before.
So this is an anomaly. It's not, and being we have a entity we've been doing business with for some 24 years, it never occurred to anyone to pick up the phone and say, hey, what's going on? It appears you're non-responsive. Are you no longer interested in doing business with the state?
Mr. Chairman, our process actually doesn't allow for that sort of communication. The statutes allow for discussion with those that are deemed responsive and responsible offerers, but there is no identified place in our statutes that allow us to have that sort of communication outside the formal process.
Would Senator Davis?
You said that it's in statute that you can't communicate with someone if they were non-responsive or didn't turn in all the material. Where is that? What statute is that? Where is it?
Through the chair, Senator Davis, the statute allows for discussions with those that are responsive and responsible offers. There's no provision in there for any other type of communication in there. There are allowances for communications for clarification. However, it appeared to us with the material that was available at the time that Aetna was non-responsive.
But there's nothing actually in there that
prohibits.
Kept you from calling should you wanted to call.
There's not an explicit prohibition from that, but that's never been our practice or an interpretation of the process.
And who would have made the decision at that point that Aetna was non-responsive?
That would have been the procurement officer at the time.
That is yourself, or?
No, we had two procurement officers on this. Originally, the procurement officer's name was Victor Lehmer. A new procurement officer took over because of workload issues. His name is Walter Harvey.
So, but the original Mr. Lehmer would have been the person that made the original determination that because materials were missing, they were non-responsive.
That's correct.
Yeah. And welcome, Representative Guttenberg.
Mr. Chair.
We're just now going through the history of this contract and the problems we're discussing at the moment, how materials disappeared would make Aetna non-responsive. At the minimum, we should have a learning experience here. What procedures are you going to put in place so that materials don't get misplaced again?
Mr. Chairman, we've not done anything yet to address this. It's still a live situation. We've not had time to really assess what measures we should put in place.
And at 30 plus million, is this an RFP that is larger than usual, average, or smaller than normally you deal with?
Mr. Chairman, this is one of the bigger RFPs, certainly, that the Department of Administration does.
And again, the size of this RFP, again, at least for myself, the lack of oversight or procedures when we're dealing with this kind of money, I've been counseled to not look for malfeasance where just pure incompetence will do. But I'm very concerned that this amount of money, we have to be very, very careful in our procedures and obviously above reproach, and at this point it doesn't appear that we are. Well, we can continue with the process.
As a senator, to that issue, there is no question there was a screw-up here in terms of not locating that notebook at the appropriate time.
Yes.
That is correct. Absolutely. And we're sorry that happened.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if I understand right, you normally just have one procurement officer, but because of the workload, you got a new person on board, and the new person was given one of the bigger RFPs that we deal with?
Actually, this, I think, was Walt's, or Vern's number two. It's a new person in the sense that it was the second person assigned to this procurement, but this is second only to Vern, the most experienced of the procurement officers in the department.
Okay, so they got changed in the middle? I guess I don't quite understand what happened.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the procurement officer at the time, Mr. Lehmer, had numerous other projects that, through no fault of his, hit at the same time. Right now, they're reviewing two major RFPs for the Division of Finance. He was just simply spread too thin. Recognizing that, we offered the services of Mr. Harvey, who is probably one of the most experienced contracting officers in the state. He manages the contracting officers in our central procurement section, and Mr. Harvey was put on the case because of his experience, and therefore allowing Mr. Lehmer to go and perform his duties on two other high-profile critical RFPs.
All the materials are available for those RFPs, I hope.
Certainly.
Who would physically, just follow this a little bit further, who physically receives the materials for an RFP and then files them and then would retrieve them? Is this the procurement officer or is a staff person or something?
Mr. Chairman, generally speaking, an RFP has instructions on where to submit proposals, and generally they are that they're to be submitted to the attention of the procurement officer. Procurement officer is responsible for receiving them and handling them and storing them in a secured area.
And so in this case, the original procurement officer would have received the binders from Aetna, stored them, and then would have made the decision that they weren't all there.
Well, in this case, they were so voluminous they did not fit in his workplace. As I understand it, they had to be stored in the Division of Retirement and Benefits area in a secured area. There were I don't know how many boxes of binders they were, but Aetna's proposal alone was, I believe, something like six or seven copies of four each, four-inch binders. So there were numerous boxes there. And unfortunately, when he went to retrieve them to present them to the proposal evaluation committee, he just simply overlooked one of those boxes. So what the procurement evaluation committee was given was three of the four-inch binders, not four of the four-inch binders.
Well, you know, and if there were 15 or 20, I could understand an overlooking. But when this material comes in, I assume someone signs for it. In this case, probably the procurement officer.
Yes, sir.
And you sign for four, and then when you review, there aren't four. Well, let's go on. The Aetna was determined to be non-responsive, and the next step then was what?
The next step, as I was mentioning, Senator, is we entered into, that is the PEC and the procurement officer, entered into discussions with Premera Blue Cross on their proposal, a normal process of fleshing out the details of their proposal and ensuring that it met all the state's criteria, ensuring that it was in the best interest of the state to accept a proposal of their terms and price. And ultimately, it was the decision of the procurement officer in consultation with the PEC to issue a notice
of award. Excuse me, PEC?
Proposal Evaluation Committee.
Okay, and that consisted of?
The individuals are in this packet, I believe, but I don't know exactly.
And
normally, just as a matter of course, the statute provides that RFPs can be reviewed and scored by either a procurement officer alone or a proposal evaluation committee consisting of not less than three people.
And as long as I've got you interrupted, the Blue Cross material, did they come in similar binders?
I've never seen it in terms of its original form. I've seen the boxes of copies of it going out recently, but I don't know.
Four or five?
Mr. Chairman, the Premiera proposals were contained in one 4-inch binder.
Okay. Thank you. And as PEC, it's my understanding that at least in complex RFPs, and this seems to be one fairly complex, that there have been occasions when the department hires consultants that are experts in this area to help evaluate proposals. Did that happen in this instance?
Mr. Chairman, it did not.
And I'm wondering why and who would have made that decision.
If I could, Senator, the administrative code requires that a PEC consists of three state employees or public officials. It actually, in terms of the content of the PEC itself, I don't know that an expert could actually be a member of the PEC.
Mr. Chairman, we have on occasion hired consultants to be serve in an advisory role to an evaluation committee. In this instance, however, you have a mature program and an administrator in the retirement and Division of Retirement and Benefits with much experience with the program, and also the PEC members themselves were very knowledgeable about the program. It was felt at the time that an outside consultant was not necessary. An outside consultant is actually probably the exception to the rule.
All right, thank you.
So going forward, ultimately it was determined that by the procurement officer, then Walt Harvey, that it was in the state's best interest to issue a notice of intent to award to Premiera Blue Cross. You can see on this sheet that I've provided you that sort of summarizes what happened next in terms of the proposals and the timing for that. As you can see, the original cost proposals from early January, and that's the deadline for the proposals, and not necessarily when they were received, I believe.
Right.
But Aetna's original proposal in terms of cost is reflected there. There were two numbers, actually. One referred to as an immature proposal, one as a mature. We didn't know exactly, I think, ultimately what that meant, but nonetheless, we would assume that the lower number would be the appropriate one. And as the story continues, we confirm that with Premiera. But then Premiera's original proposal that was the subject of these discussions as the single responsive bidder was for $34 million. What happened next was, you can see as I talked about, we went into discussions with Premiera, and there's an opportunity under the statute in the administrative code to, once you enter into discussions, to ask them to make a best and final offer for the benefit of the state. And that was done, and you can see there was a slight decrease in the price offered for that three-year contract. Now, this is the point in time, that was February 13, this is the point in time when, after the notice went out, Aetna learned that they had been deemed non-responsive. They contacted the department. I believe Walt Harvey, the procurement officer, had discussions. Aetna was very adamant that they had been responsive. And so he went and looked further again, and I don't know all the details of it, but ultimately determined that there was this other notebook that had been misplaced by department administration staff. And that being said, that's, you know, when it came back to me at that point, and Vern came in and said, okay, now what are we going to do? How can we resolve this in the best interest of the state and the bidders and be fair? And so at that point, we asked to have a teleconference with representatives of both Premera Blue Cross and Aetna, which we did, and we explained the problem. That now, and I have to back up one step. When the Aetna representatives contacted the procurement officer and learned about, basically initiated the process that resulted in finding the binder, they also asked to know what the price was that Aetna had, or that Premera had bid. And a number was given to Aetna's representatives at that time of approximately $34 million, which is entirely appropriate because once a notice of intent to award has been issued, all the documents related to the procurement are public. So going forward, then we find out that in fact Aetna does have a responsive bid ultimately, or at least could have. And so we get all the representatives on the phone, and I was sort of led the meeting because I know I sense how important this was and I wanted it done right. And I said, you know, we've got a problem because we now, it's very possible that Aetna could be responsive and susceptible to award. That's the, those are the terms of art, at which point their proposal would be scored, and then we would see how it came out. Unfortunately, you know, if we were to enter into discussions and then a best and final offer with Aetna, Aetna now knows what Premera's best and final number is, and so the competitive nature of the process is lost. So what I suggested to the parties was that we could go through the process of determining whether or not Aetna's proposal was responsive and susceptible to award. If it was, have the proposal scored. At that point, enter into discussions with Aetna, just as we had done with Premera, and then have both parties do another best and final offer so that the number essentially would be secret again as against each other. One other caveat was that we would tell Premera what Aetna's original number was, so they'd be on a level playing field in that regard. Not entirely level, because Premera actually had made sort of a second offer, and I can tell you that in our discussions trying to reach an agreement to follow this path, Premera was very concerned that they'd already sort of bid against themselves once and were unhappy. But nonetheless, ultimately the parties agreed to go ahead with this modified method of reaching a conclusion. One of the reasons I think that it served the parties well, we could have simply stopped and started over. That was an option. But if we had done that, then all of the materials in both proposals would have become public. And so not only would Aetna and Premera be able to go read, you know, the approximate number of the three-year total of the price, all of the subjective, the other 50% of this bid, all of the details of their proposals would have been released to the other party. And so I think at this point in time, I think the parties thought that it was in their best interest to go forward with just this last best and final process, which resulted, as you can see in these numbers at the very end here on the 28th, of $32 million and about $31 million for the ultimate successful bidder.
I'm sorry. Yes, Representative Wilson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry. I've got a HESS meeting that starts at 3, and I did have a couple of questions, so I'll
please go ahead,
and then I'll leave quick. On your response, and I'm looking at what page this is, page 10, at the next to the last paragraph at the bottom, it says that you did believe that Premera and Aetna were afforded fair and equal treatment, and it says, however, that does not mean the state must discuss the exact items or the same number of items with each offer. It seems to me that you would at least try to ask the same questions to make sure that you got equal answers from people, but I realize that might not be because you're also responding to what they gave you. But on the next paragraph, it says, it's reasonable to conclude that a PEC would have fewer items to clarify and discuss with Aetna, who is the current contractor. And it just appears to me if Premera only presented you with one 4-inch notebook and Aetna 4, that there would be a lot more things to ask and to talk about. And so it's just hard to understand the process that went through when there's such a difference in the amount of information that was given. So those are just questions that came up to me and that I thought of as I read that. But I'm sorry, I have to go, so I apologize for.
Well, and I know you do, but there was a question you asked me that I'll ask for you of the commissioner, is that what can we do now when many of us think that the process was flawed and it's going to be great inconvenience to maybe 68,000 people, and we'll get an answer for you.
Okay. I guess I know how many of my constituents and people across the state with the fiasco that's happened with Medicaid D, when the people they've had terrible times, they've been frustrated, they haven't gotten their medicines like they're supposed to and everything. They just have gone through that, and to think that they're going to have to go through something else again is concerning to me. So I just want to make sure that we do it and do it so that whatever the decision is made, that it's with the least amount of problems as possible.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Representative.
And I believe Vern could address the question if you would.
Please.
Mr. Chairman, the question was regarding the amount of information and what gets discussed and what is presented in a best and final for competing proposals. And that there is no guideline in statute for that, but that is really wholly dependent on the proposal itself and the state's evaluation of each proposal individually. I think it stands to reason that you would get differing questions from posed to different proposers just based on the different nature and different solutions and different options provided in each proposal. And I don't think it's fair to say that because one proposer was asked a certain amount of questions and another proposer was asked a different amount of questions, that process is not fair. What that process is intended to do is to help clarify what the proposer intended, and in the end to get a best and final offer back that is more attractive to the state. So I guess I'd leave it at that.
All right, thank you. I get competing numbers, and again, I understand and have some empathy about how complex this is, and it's, of course, as you point out, one of the largest RFPs the state will do. And again, it would seem as if it would have been wise if we could have had someone who is an expert in this area to help us through it. Part of the proposal is for their administrative fees. Part of it is network savings. Part of it is pharmacy savings. Part of it, of course, are outstanding claims as the companies have to go through that. How do we end up with a bottom line number that we can have some confidence in?
I can attempt that, and perhaps Vern can supplement. My understanding is the proposal
The request for proposals was designed to elicit a per-member, per-month charge, which is essentially what we're paying now under the current contract, and that, you know, as you can, if we have that chart here, but I do have a chart that actually has the per-person, per-month charge, but it's different for the retiree and the active health care plans. And there are other financial elements to this. One of them you can see has to do with the pharmacy rebate guarantee, but that was not part of the cost element. That was part of the subjective element to be judged in that 50%. There were basically three chunks of evaluation here. There's a cost chunk, which was 40% of the total points available, 5,000 points. That, by the way, was reduced for this particular deal, this particular proposal. Normally, there's an administrative order from the governor's office, I believe, that requires us to count 60% cost. We obtained a waiver for that in this particular RFP because we thought it important to have more subjective factors have a larger weight than just price. So in that's what allowed the subjective factors here to be raised to 50%. And then there's a 10% amount that is the Alaska bidder's preference. So that's the methodology, I guess.
And in previous conversations, you'd mentioned to me that about 40% of the evaluation was based on price. The other 60% is based on a variety of other things. Can you expand a bit on what the 60% would have been based on?
Senator, I can. This is just, and we can provide this to the committee. I don't know if I have copies, but we can certainly leave copies with you. And actually, is this in some of our bid or protest response, these numbers?
Yes.
I believe in that document you have our protest response. Maybe I can find it for you. It lists the elements. Yeah, it's on page 4. You can see the technical proposal portion. You can see the list of things that are included to be evaluated and the percentages that would be assigned to those. Then there's the cost proposal at 40%, and then the Alaska offers preference, which is at 10%.
And one of the parts of this bid is a pharmacy rebate. As I understand that if people choose to use a volume deal that the administrator has, whether it's Blue Cross or Aetna, the state gets a rebate for that amount of money. And I've heard from some pharmacies that they're concerned that this change will be either cost them money or difficult to administer. Have you had inquiries from pharmacies on this change?
No, we haven't, Senator, and I'd be happy to look into it further, but it's not my understanding that the fundamental process will be any different. My understanding is that certain pharmaceutical manufacturers in coordination with agreements they reach with healthcare providers or third-party administrators agree to rebate some money if their drug is prescribed by one of the healthcare providers that's providing our services. And the third-party administrators, both Aetna and Blue Cross Blue Shield, have these kinds of arrangements, and they do that on behalf of the state. The only, and in this on the front page here, you can see there was a proposal. There were proposals from these folks about third-party or about pharmacy rebates, although they weren't valued in the pricing because these are sort of floors that they're offering. Right? Hopefully, maybe rebates would be higher than this. But the original Aetna proposal proposed $3.5 million in annual guarantee for rebates. In other words, we'll make sure you at least get $3.5 million a year, regardless of how many rebates we accumulate. Primera had no minimum guarantee for rebates at that point. Primera's next proposal had no minimum guarantee for pharmacy rebates. The best and final from both Aetna reduced its $3.5 million pharmacy rebate to $750,000 a year, and Premera increased from no minimum guarantee to $3 million per year. So that's, other than that, we haven't had any complaints about this. I would think the process would be very similar, but we could look further if you'd like, Senator.
And did I understand you to say that this last and best final offer for Aetna for $32 million in round numbers and Premera in $30 million in round numbers did not include this pharmaceutical rebate?
No, the best and final is on the that top sheet here.
Mm-hmm.
Aetna's proposal was $750,000 guaranteed minimum per year. Premera's was $3 million per year.
But, and was then that amount deducted from their final offer to come to the total price?
No, it wasn't. The only numbers that were evaluated, in my understanding, were the per member per month charges. This component, although financial, was considered as part of the technical proposal, another aspect of the evaluation.
Okay. Senator, Representative Gettenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In this evaluation,
you look senatorial sitting in that chair.
Thank you. When you were evaluating the pharmacy rebates, did you get any information on what the bottom line or what the baseline was for pharmaceuticals? Because they could be starting from different places. So in some ways, the base price for pharmaceuticals for one rebate, for one plan, could be considerably higher or lower than the other. And the rebate, even though it might be lower, would still be a greater savings.
Well, I could, through the chair, I can say that I didn't evaluate any of these proposals, and neither did the chief procurement officer, so let me begin there. And so I may not have all the answers here, but I don't know whether or not that was an aspect of the evaluation. Right? I don't know whether there was essentially, I guess you could say, was there a price list of this is what the base price for mm-hmm. this set of drugs is with Aetna and this for Blue Cross Blue Shield. I would suggest probably not, but I don't know, because if you got into that, I suppose you could also get into what's the base price for setting a broken leg at this service provider and all manner of claims that are administered by the third party administrator.
Thank you. Can you help me understand network saving share as part of the proposal from both entities?
My understanding of that, Senator, is that the network savings that large insurance companies and third-party administrators, and generally they're both the same, they have some they are self-insured and some that they insure themselves, and I believe both these companies do. In order to achieve cost savings, they enter into agreements with healthcare providers around the country where there's a deal to obtain a lower price than retail, I guess, for various services. And both of these companies, as I understand it, have that kind of a network and are both capable of providing network savings. It would be hard to compare exact apples to apples, I suppose, but again, I believe that was part of the technical proposal analysis and not factored into the pricing per se.
Yeah, the numbers I've seen is about $1.5 million network saving for Aetna and nearly $12 million for Blue Cross. I mean, does that mean that we're going to have more discount docs out there? Is that what this means?
Senator, I haven't seen numbers like that. I don't know that there are, that you would be able to get that specific. I know that when I met with the Premera folks and when they came up to visit with it after the notice of award, that they were confident that they could equal the kind of network savings that Aetna had been providing, perhaps exceed it. But again, I think the time will tell about that. I don't know the number.
Yeah, the network, I mean, they Blue Cross plans to exceed it by a factor of nearly 10. Information I've received. On you mentioned this contracting group committee of state employees. did they contact the new retirement board as they discussed these change of proposals?
Senator, I sit on the Alaska Retirement Management Board, and I think I would probably be the only one who knew about these events while they were ongoing, except to the degree that the ARM Board was notified that we were going through this process, but I don't believe that was the case.
I think
maybe one was one member on the one of the PEC members. It's possible, and I could check that out, but it's possible that there actually was a.
Well, the reason I ask, I believe in the past, the retirement board has been consulted, and they apparently weren't at this point in this change.
I'm not sure which board that would be, Senator, because, of course, the ARM board is brand new.
Yeah.
If you'd be referring to ASPIB or PERS-TERS boards, I know that SB 141 changed a number of things about who does what. And it's clear that, at least in my understanding under the statute, that as plan administrator, that this is the obligation of the Department of Administration, and that the ARM Board's role is essentially to manage the assets of the retirement plans to maximize their ability to deal with the liabilities.
Well, I understand in the past they were consulted. They certainly did not have a vote. They were simply consulted. I have shared with you and the committee members a letter that I've received from Tom Engelhart, Magellan Health Services, an Alaskan company, and they're very concerned about a loss of business that this change will bring them. And they ask three specific questions. One about the two different teams of evaluators to agree grade the non-cost proposals. And I share their concern there, because this seems to be an area where it'd be very subjective and you ought to use the same people. They make the charge that the state appeared to have coached Primera. I would appreciate you reviewing that charge and getting back to us. And the state failed to evaluate all of Aetna's separate pharmacy claim management proposals. It could have saved the state $3 million. Again, I don't expect an answer here. You've just received that, but would it's an Alaskan company that has some concerns, and I think they should be addressed.
Senator, we'd be happy to do that, and I can say that I believe that the bid protest response addresses all three of these. I would defer to that at this point. If there are questions beyond that are not answered by the document we provided yesterday, I'd be happy to answer more. But these literally are, I think, elements of the brief that we provided back in response, these three different issues.
All right. Well, we'll get them a copy of the brief. And Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, like Representative Wilson, I'm concerned about the transition that will come sometime this summer. Can you tell us what the review for the committee, what the timeline is for the switchover, the mechanics of that, the paperwork involved, the hassle factor, what's going to happen to thousands of people this summer, and when the phone starts ringing off the hook in my office, will that happen, and what's the process?
Through the chair, Senator Ellis, I don't know the exact details of the process. I have discussed the process in general with Blue Cross. We have folks in retirement benefits who are actively pursuing this transition right now. I can say that, to their credit, that Blue Cross has recently successfully transitioned Weyerhaeuser Corporation, Microsoft Corporation, from another plan administrator to their own administration, and has been, by all accounts, very successful in doing so. I'm very committed to making sure that people are not confused. People don't, nothing falls through the cracks. I made that very clear when I met with these folks, that they're going to have a very high standard to meet. And but the technical aspects of this, I think, you know, there'll be educational sessions. They'll be sending people up, they'll be setting up offices. The transition will happen in the new plan year, on July 1, and there will be a period of time for a run out of the claims that exist now, and we will negotiate, as I understand it, with Aetna. to compensate them for running out the claims that remain that have been filed up to June 30. And so there'll be a little bit of a lull as you ramp forward. You know, you won't have the claims in the past to have to deal with. You just start July 1 and go forward. I know that there's already a process underway to obtain information and records and the like from Aetna for transition to Blue Cross, as I understand it. But I'd be happy to come back and bring people who know the actual details, because I am committed to making sure that those phone calls don't come, or at least they're as few as possible.
Well, as we go through this transfer process now, there is an appeal that has been filed.
Correct.
And as I understand, these appeals can take quite some time. But can you speculate what will happen if the appeal is successful? We're going to transition to Blue Cross. The appeal would be successful. They would then transition back to Aetna. And 68,000 people are going to be on their phones.
In just a minute, Senator. The appeal process, or the protest process, is underway right now, and I want to be very specific about what the process is and describe it for you, and then I'd be happy to talk about what remedies there are. There was a protest filed. You have it in front of you. It was responded to. We had 15 days, I believe, under the statute to respond. That was done yesterday, I believe, and you have that in front of you. There is now an opportunity to appeal that decision of the procurement officer to the Commissioner of Administration, myself. I believe it's 10 days?
10 days.
10 days. And then there's a process of evaluation where I would, in this particular case, and this was a decision that I made at the very beginning of the issues here, because of my involvement in the process to try to achieve a good and fair result, I will not be the final determiner. I can delegate and will delegate my decision, final administrative decision, to the Office of Administrative Hearings. That's the normal process that has been set up under the new central panel. Procurement cases go to the central panel when referred to them by the commissioner. And so the case would be assigned, if it were appealed to me, to the Office of Administrative Hearings. They have a 120-day deadline to come up with a decision from the time of filing to the time of ultimate decision. There could be a hearing if the hearing officer believed that there were evidentiary matters that needed to be described. Could be decided on the briefs if they determined the otherwise. At the time of their final decision by the hearing officer, then there's a 30-day timeline for anybody who would dislike that opinion to appeal to the Superior Court. And then that process, administrative appeals in the Superior Court, can vary in time from months to a year, perhaps, depending on the complexity and the caseload and the judge involved. And then ultimately, there's an appeal from there to the Supreme Court. And in my experience, appeals to the Supreme Court, unless expedited by someone, take about 2 years from start to finish these days, maybe a little less. So that's the process.
And as I understand, this new contract is for 3 years. Is there an automatic renewal?
No, there is there are 4 one-year options at the end, and I believe they are fixed price based upon a cost of living adjustment.
And so by the time the appeals process runs its course, this contract could nearly be up for renewal.
That's certainly true.
With this, I think fair to say, highly unusual event in the bid process, and did you consider just asking Aetna to extend the current contract until you could have issued a new RFP?
We are not allowed to simply extend the existing contract, and I know that Aetna's proposal in their protest was to extend for no less than 6 months at the current price. That's simple. We're not simply allowed to extend contracts that have expired. So we have to go through a competitive process of some kind.
Well, and in the 60% of the technical, this contract now gives Aetna 80% share of Alaska's market, or excuse me, Blue Cross Premera, 80% of the Alaska market. I know the Division of Insurance has been working very diligently to expand competitive market in Alaska insurance. This seems to go the other way. Did that at all enter into the conversations in the 60% that's non-cost?
Senator, of course, neither of us were there in the conversations, and so we can't say categorically, but we do know that the process is that the only matters that are to be evaluated are those listed in the proposal itself. And I, on that page 4 that I referenced, I don't see anything that would have to do with that kind of market share issue. And I will say the technical proposal is 50%, and that there is a 10% offer as preference.
Yeah. Well, are there additional questions? We're about to run out of time. No. Thank you for coming. I think you're aware that there's still a high level of frustration in the, at least in this committee, and with many legislators I've talked with about how this process has gone forward. At the very minimum, I would expect that there will be some changes in your procedures, particularly when you're dealing with RFPs of this magnitude, both in the cost and the number of Alaskans that are impacted by it. And I can't speak for all the legislature, but I think this legislator will continue to look for ways that this contract can be negated or revoked, and we could go back and start from scratch again. So with that, we will stand adjourned. We meet again next Tuesday at 1:30 in our normal meeting room, and thank you all for attending.
Thank you for this hearing.
Thank you, Senator.
An excellent question.
It goes.